serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation today with 95-year-old Leopoldo Griego of Albuquerque, New Mexico. We've heard how he left school to work in a CCC camp, later working as a civilian at Kirtland Army Air Corps Base, where he had some memorable encounters with a couple of Hollywood stars turned servicemen. At age 18, Leo joined the Marine Corps. He spent time on Guadalcanal, New Guinea, and New Britain before a battle that would change his life and thousands of others. In September 1944, the 1st Marine Division was tasked with trying to seize an airstrip on a small coral island in the Palaus called Peleliu. Had you ever heard of this place before? Had you seen it on a map? Did you have any idea?
No. Yeah. I didn't know what Peleliu was until I got there, you know. They never tell you exactly, you know. We're not supposed to know where we're on the, but the first wave, boy, those Japanese, they were throwing rockets, and they were good. You can see the hitting, the burning, and the Marines floating that was hitting, you know. We were on the LST, they call it, to get us in there. So we were going out there, and they were hitting us. And all of a sudden, one hit right in front of us. The boat went like this at the for hire. Boy, that guy from the Navy, he took it like this out of the way, and you're going to see the bombs. We were lucky to get out of that one. So he took it. So then we started going like this, you know, on the boat, you know.
You're zigzagging to try to dodge fire?
Yeah, but we couldn't go in that deep in because it was all coral on the bottom.
Right.
So the ship stopped, I don't know how many feet, quite a feet from where he stopped. Because it finally hit the coral. They point like that, and I jumped to the side because they were shooting. The first Marine that leaving, they're going in front, I think they got killed right there.
Which wave were you?
Well, I was in the third wave. So the first wave could make it. The second would make it. The third. So what left of this, what left of us, we finally got together, and then we all went in together. And
so, but the guys who went in front of you, heavy, heavy casualties.
Heavy casualties.
And you're hung up on the reef. The ramp comes down.
And I jump alongside.
Because you knew in that moment that if you went out the front, you'd probably get killed?
Yeah, exactly. The water was up to here with my gun and going on that reef, but I made it. And I was crawling there on that sand, and Marines were, I mean, they were dying all around me. I mean, the Japanese had the machine guns. They'd been trained, they knew how to do this. Even though our Navy was throwing all those, but they were missing them a lot, you know. They didn't hit. So I remember that a tank came in, and it got stuck. And I could hear those bullets, so I went down to close to the tank on the bottom. And then I said, no, I got to get, and they kept saying, get off the beach, you know, because they were coming. So I saw this guy get up, and there was a little hill, you know, and we were supposed to go over that hill. So he went up there, and I was just about to go when I saw him go. They shot him, went down. I don't know if they killed him or what, but he just dropped. I said, no, I can't go there yet. Maybe wait a few more minutes. Then another guy went, and he went through. Then I said, well, maybe. Then I went through. So I went through, and we got together on the runway. So we started digging our foxhole pretty deep. Thank goodness. We were digging a hole there because the Japanese were on the other side of the runway, and we were on this side. And like I said, I don't remember what I spent that night. But I remember I left my bag about from 10, 15 feet like that. And I went and grabbed it to bring it back to my hole. As soon as I was crawling like this, and I grabbed the bag like this. Pew, the bullet hit right behind my nose right there. Man, I turn around. I even left the bag out there. I don't think I touched ground in the foxhole. And I stayed on that foxhole. Good thing it was deep enough. And the reason I say that, because my good friend, that Indian friend that I met before from Oklahoma, very quiet Indian, that Japanese guy had a bullet right there. Man, he did. It was a sniper. So I stayed down like that.
So the sniper killed your Native American friend with a shot through the forehead.
Yes, right through the forehead. And he killed the other one. I don't know where the other one was killed, but I know he killed two for sure, but I think they told me he killed more.
And he almost got you. It was inches away from your nose.
So I stayed there for quite a while, and then I saw a Marine walking and said, hey, how's everything going? Why? Well, I think there's a sniper. No, come here. I'll show you. Look at him. They finally got it. He's hanging down way over there. Somebody finally found it and shot him. He was hanging down.
He had been up in the tree, and now he's hanging from the tree.
He was.
And that first day on Peleliu, I believe you told me that you believe now you may have saved a friend of yours' life. Yes. By applying first aid to his ear?
Yes.
What happened there?
Well, when all this was going on, then they finally said, okay, let's go. We start walking, and man, you could see the Marine just dropping all over.
So you're moving toward where the Japanese are at the other side of the runway?
Exactly. They had a pillbox they were waiting. After finding that Marine, the shot on the ear, afterwards, I went out like that, and the other guys, I don't know, I never found out if they were dead or whatever. Something happened, but there was a great crater. Man, I jumped inside that crater because of they were shooting, dropping Marines all over.
Well, tell me about your friend's ear.
Well, he was a corporal, and a corporal, he was in charge of three more PFC, so he was our corporal. When they told us to get going, we all started going together, you know, and we were just zigzagging like that because you could see the bullets going all over, the Marines dropping all over. And I remember we dropped down because we saw the bullet like that, and that's when I told you they hit him like that.
He dropped down with you, but yes. The bullet hit his ear.
Yes. So I grabbed him and put this thing on it, and there was like a foxhole, but big dirt. Pile of dirt like that, so I pull him into behind that dirt, you know. So I don't know how long he stayed there enough for him to go back, you know.
But his ear was dangling?
Yeah, it was dangling on here.
All but the lobe had been severed from his head.
Yeah, all of it but him, because he was like this, you know. And he said, well, it's just a scratch, I said. Okay, get going. So I left.
So you tell him it's just a scratch, but you actually had to pick the ear back up and tape it to his head?
We always carry bandages with us, uh-huh. You know. Anyway, after I was hit and everything, and I went back to the camp and everything, way after the war, way after that, he was over there, and he said, hey, I want to talk to you. I said, why? Remember you said, it's just a scratch? Look, I don't have a damn ear. They cut it off. It was just hanging here. But I don't know if I save his life. I say, get behind that dirt there and continue going. But then jump on that hole. There was a guy there, and he said, why did you come here? Why? Look at the up there. I said, and then he put his helmet on his rifle. Look, we were trapped with a great big crater. There were more Marines coming in there. And thank goodness a Marine that came in there had a radio. And our tanks were right behind us, you know. And he called the tank. They said, we're so-and-so. There's a pillbox over there. They're shooting at us. And he said, yeah. He said, we see it. Boy, that tank went over there and pew, blew him up. And we had a chance to get out of the run up there. And
but if the tank hadn't come, you would have been trapped in that crater because anybody who tried to get up would be shot.
Yeah. In fact, one of them did. One guy went in there. He said, I'm going to get out of here. I said, you can't. We told him he's going to get shot. And we could see him. He went up and started running. You ought to see the bullets going behind him. And he finally made it to another north, and then he went over. He made it through.
Wow.
But I wouldn't take the chance. But good thing that tank saved our life. And that's when I got hit after that.
Yeah, and you made the statement that you don't remember going to sleep that night.
That's right.
Maybe you didn't even sleep.
Yep. Who knows? I don't know nothing.
Because it was so intense and nonstop.
The sniper that shot at me, you know, did it happen that day or did it happen the next day? I don't know. I never know what happened that night.
Tell me about what happened when you got hit.
Well, I was right in the front lines, you know, and then we knew the Japs were just right in front of us. They were dropping mortars at us, you know, and one of them, mortar drop, I heard, I think there were four Marines, right, hit right where they were, and they killed all four Marines right away, and wounded three. I was one of the wounded ones. There was a guy next to me. He hollered at me. He said, Grigo, I'm hit, and I said, I am too. I said, I was holding myself like this, you know.
Holding your right shoulder.
Yeah, my right shoulder, you know. I still got a scar right here and a scar right here. I thought for a year it was a bullet. Found out it was shrapnel. Somehow it went there and it went out because it had to go up. But if it were going to hit there, it would go like they would have killed me. This way, he would have killed me. So he must have hit the bone and cut my muscles here because I'm always hurting. I'm hurting. My arm right now is hurting, you know.
Because you have a wound in your right chest,
right,
and also in your right arm just below the shoulder. Yeah. So you're saying it had to come across, otherwise it would have hit your heart or something like that.
It's really strange that it happened that way. I wouldn't have known that maybe shrapnel hit me or still being in there. But when they took me to, when I got hit, all the wounded, they had a ship. with a big red cross. And then they would take you to an island. That's where they was taking all the wounded. So they took me there. So I was there for quite a while. But I still remember I was laying down there in bed there a few days after. It smelled, it stink, you know. I was smelling this, and I told the doctor. So what he did, he put a cloth in there, like a drainage, if you want to call it. Uh-huh. And when I told them, he just pulled it out. So that I knew that it was a hole right through like that. There was nothing in inside of me like that.
So there was a cloth all the way from one wound to the other?
Yeah, this far.
So an entry wound and an exit wound.
Exit, exactly.
And they had left the cloth in there.
The doctor put that cloth for drainage. I'm not a doctor, but I guess to help it drain the blood that's in there or the dirt out of the shrapnel or whatever.
So you told us a little bit about what the wound ended up being, but what about the moment? What were you doing when you were hit? What did it feel like? Can you help us understand what that's like?
Yeah, well, like I said, we were on the front lines there. I think island was all mostly coral rock, so you couldn't dig foxholes. So you get rocks and make your own, and that's what I already had done that. And if I remember, a guy in the Navy, a Spanish guy from Texas on the Navy, the ship that took us over, he gave me a can of pork and beans on the ship. So I got my pork and beans. I got hungry. I've been going through. I got hungry, and I put the pork and beans there. And as I remember correctly, it came to him. I went and got my dagger. I had the dagger to open it, and that's when I got hit. I didn't even get my pork and beans.
You're just about finally going to eat.
Yeah, finally going. So that's when I start crawling.
So what did it feel like when you get hit? What did you feel?
Well, I didn't know how bad it was. It's kind of hard to say. This went through because I didn't even know it went through. I don't know. All I know that my jacket was torn and I was bleeding very bad. And I went like that crawling.
Holding your other hand over the right side where you're bleeding.
And I left everything, rifled and everything. And I start crawling behind the lines. And here this boat, I don't know what they call it, the one that has tracks on it. It goes in the land and water.
An Amtrak.
Yeah, they were picking up wounded Marines. So they happened to be there, you know, and he had that thing. And I still remember crawling in there, and he puts that thing up, and you could hear that bullet hitting that boat, man. And then he took off to the sea, and then the ship, like I told you, with a big red cross. And I remember, I guess they had like a big hoist. They put you in, and then they'll take you up like that and took you into the ship. And I was still holding myself like this. They haven't done nothing because the Marines were worse than I am. And the boat was going like this.
Rocking back and forth.
And then all of a sudden, the boat was going like this. I passed out. I had lost a lot of blood. I had a big, great Navy guy from my feet. Hey, wake up, wake up. My feet. I woke up, and that's when they took care of my... And from there, I don't remember what happened. I don't remember if I passed out or what. But I ended up in that island where they were taking us wounded, you know.
So if that amphibious vehicle hadn't come by right when it did, you probably would have bled out.
Exactly. We were on the front line. They were killing all of those. I mean, they had us over there. I don't know how. I think they finally, what they did, they finally brought those flamethrowers. I think that's the way they finally threw the flame to get those Japanese from the attack. I don't know. All I know, they took me out. And the war had ended for me already.
How much pain were you in?
Actually, I didn't feel any pain. I don't remember saying, boy, it really hurt. It hurts more now when I'm sleeping. Like right now, it hurts, you know.
What about the recovery? How long were you hospitalized? How long did it
take?
Well,
I must have been quite a while because it kind of healed quite a bit. So I went back to my outfit. So we went out to the rifle range again. I got me another rifle, and I was going with the rifle like that. And I said, I went like this, worse. When I went like this, and I hit the gun, went like this, it's just like a hammer hit me here. I fell backwards, and then my heart started going like this. And the sergeant said, what's the matter with you? And then I told him, I said, I was here, go see a doctor right now. So by that time, as far as I know, I was healed. But when that rifle hit there, man, I was swollen this big.
So the recoil hit you right where you'd been wounded, and
exactly.
It swelled up. Yeah.
So anyway, I went to see the doctor, and the doctor said, oh man, it's pretty bad, you know. How did it happen? I said, how long have you been here? I said, I've been here about 2 years. I told him I had been working out and all that. You know what? You've been here long enough. I'm going to send you home. I could have kissed that guy. That's the sweetest word I ever heard, man. They sent you home because I couldn't fight anyway because of my arm. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, all those Marines, they went to Okinawa. A lot of them were killed. They were all replaced. You know, and later on, I found that they killed all of them, my whole platoon that I wanted. Mm-hmm. That's what they told me, that they ran into a machine gun nest and they were all killed. So I probably would have been killed too if I would have gone through Okinawa.
And the reality is quite a few guys that you knew were killed.
Yeah, well,
and
yes.
You talked before about your friend Jimmy Allen.
Jimmy Allen was my best friend. Jimmy Allen, the way he died, when the tank came at us at Peleliu at the runway, one tank ran over him halfway. And a friend of mine came, hey, Greg, Jimmy wants to talk to you. He got hit by a tank ran over him. So I went over there, and they had him on a stretcher. And he was laying down on that stretcher. And he said, hey, well, he said, I guess this will send me home, he said. So you know where I live, you got my address, be sure and see me because I think it's the end of the war of me. Okay, I told Jimmy, look at that. So it was kind of sad when they found out that he was killed. Her sweetheart wrote me, and mother, she wrote me a letter stating how friends we were together, you know.
So you talked about him calling you over and you seeing him on a stretcher. He's been run over by a tank. Did you know he was not going to make it, or did that news shock you later?
After the way I found out about him, when I saw him on that stretcher, I saw he was pretty bad. When I think the one drank went halfway out of his body like that. So when I got hit, when I went back to the camp before the rifle, you know, boy, the first thing I went to see, they have there the list of the ones that were killed. The limb where they were wounded. So all this wounded man, I went looking for him. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? Couldn't find him. And then when I went, they wanted to kill, there he was. He died on board ship.
Couldn't
and
recover
that,
from
that
the
really
wounds.
Hit me hard. That really hit me. And I losing my best friend like that because we were so close. We used to go get the gloves and play around with each other. We were fighting, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know the old trick? Hey, your shoes unbuttoned. Really? And he went over around. Yeah. He went trying to kiss at me, and we laughed. We were laughing. We always laugh about that. Your shoes untied.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Boom! I hit him like that. So we were very close. Very close to Jimmy.
So you had the chance, 60 years after you were wounded on Peleliu, to go back there.
Yeah.
With some other World War II veterans.
I just had to go see that. They had a big building that the Japanese had built, like a fortress, might as well call it a fortress. The walls were this thick.
Couple feet wide. Yeah.
Concrete. And the Navy, they hit it, and they finally made a hole on it. And we used to go see that, where they made that big hole. Rebar were this thick.
Like 2 inches in diameter?
2 inches in diameter. No wonder they never could penetrate. So they made that into a museum.
Did that trip change your perspective on the significance of what you'd done all those years earlier?
It should make me proud that I went through here and thank the good Lord that I'm still alive. My mother prayed for me, and this is hard because somehow they sent a letter to my mom that I was wounded. And I don't know who sent it. Maybe I guess that's normal what they do when you're wounded.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my mother, she said that she cried every single day. She wondered if I didn't have an arm, I was blind, I had legs and all that. And good thing I wrote a letter right away and said, don't worry, Mom. I've still got all my benefits, just a little slight wound. She was glad to hear that from me. But that was hard to, she was very hard to take, you know.
Well, I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us a story that only you could tell us. Is there something that you would say you're most proud of?
I'm proud as a Marine that I went as a Marine. I'm very proud of myself that I went through war. I'm glad I didn't get killed, you know. I could have been killed a lot of times, you know, and I'm glad I miss all that. I'm glad that I would join the Marines.
Once a Marine, always a Marine. Leo Griego, 95 years old. If you're ever in Albuquerque, New Mexico, maybe you'll have the privilege of shaking his hand. Check out the photos and video online at hometownheroesradio.com, where the podcast version of this episode also includes a few additional anecdotes from Leo that would not fit into our radio time. Thanks so much for spending this hour with us. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.